If you haven't figured out by now, myself and Paul and pretty much everyone in Hiker, we're all pretty big Lord of the Rings fans. And that's why this episode of the podcast was a little bit special. So Elena Osborne, who you might remember from an episode I did in season one, was preparing for the Te Araroa. And while she was getting ready for the hike, she reached out to a friend of hers by the name of Bruce Hopkins. Now, the name might not sound immediately familiar to you, unless you are a diehard Lord of the Rings fan, or you're familiar with the work that he's done with RNZ. That's Radio New Zealand. Anyway, this guy Bruce starts showing up in Elena's stories because they were hanging out while he was telling her all about his adventures on the Te Araroa. And there was something quite familiar about him. I had to speak to Bruce. Not only did he play a character in one of the most influential movies of all time, but he's also a long-distance hiker. So we had a lot to talk about. So I got in touch with Elena, and I just asked her, can you put me in touch with Bruce? I'd really love to have him on the podcast. Not long after, I'm pretty sure it was the same day, or maybe the next day because they are living in the future, she got back to me saying that, yeah, I just spoke to him and he's really interested in coming on. Gambling is coming on the podcast. You might not remember the character, but it played a pretty significant role. And actually, in the books of Lord of the Rings, he's not that big of a character. In fact, he's not really mentioned in the books all that much at all. But in the movie, down to the relationship that Bruce had with the actor that played Theoden, turned gambling into a much more significant character. And by talking to Bruce, I can see why. We spoke the day before we did the interview. I wanted to do what I always want to do with these interviews is a screening call. I'm doing air quotations right now. Really, it's just a chance for me to get to know my interviewees and to make sure that there's a rapport there. But about 30 minutes into the conversation, I was kicking myself. Why did I not record the conversation? It was fantastic. Bruce was giving me the history of his hiking career. He was giving me his life story. And he has such an interesting life story. But I'm actually thankful that I got to speak to him twice. So the next morning, I woke up at God knows what time in the morning so that I could connect with him when he was in Auckland in New Zealand, probably about 9 or 10 p.m. his time. And we just got straight into the conversation, talking about his adventure on the Te Araroa. Starting at the very tip in Cape Reinga, walking the entire length of the North and South Island down to Bluff in the South Island, and then over to Stewart Island, where he's originally from. Bruce's journey, his tramp, his adventure, or his odyssey as he likes to call it, was pretty amazing to hear about. And while we did get to talk for a good amount of time, this podcast doesn't really do justice to the adventure that he had. He actually created his own podcast in partnership with RNZ, where he documents each mile of the trail. So once you're finished this podcast, head over to wherever you listen to your podcasts and search The Long Way Home by Bruce Hopkins. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, you may or may not know that Hiker is actually an app, a mobile app, and a web app where you can find over 1,700 trails from all over the world, including the Te Araroa, which we're going to speak about today. From walks in the woods to mountain traverses to nation-spanning through hikes, Hiker has a trail for everyone who wants to truly explore the great outdoors. Download the Hiker app for free in your app store now or head over to hiker.app to discover your next great adventure. So here is my interview with Gambling, or Bruce, man of Rohan, man of Te Araroa.
Bruce Hopkins, actor, dancer, father, grandfather, steward of the land that is New Zealand, and more recently a tramper or a hiker, as we call over here. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Oh man, it's I feel privileged and honored to be invited to do this. It's very cool. Can you define tramper and hiker for me?
Actually,
I find it hard. We're right about having walked Te Araroa.
Yeah.
I use the word tramp because to me the word tramp feels like it's harder.
Okay.
And that it was a hike feels like it was easy.
Okay, that's interesting because this is actually something that comes up in the podcast quite a bit, because we would see the difference here in Ireland and the UK as the difference between walking and hiking. Hiking is the activity of kind of just walking in the woods or walking in the mountains or going for a long walk with purpose. And then in the States, they say hiking as well. They say backpacking, but the main word that's coming out at the moment is through hike, and through hike is you're walking from one end to the other. But what does what was the distance? And like, there's all these different variables. So because I never really knew was there a difference between tramping and hiking. But now, so tramping is just another level. You know, we haven't even got there yet.
Yeah, no, it has been interesting, you know, because the experience of doing Te Araroa, New Zealand's through hike, you know, 3,000 kilometers, it left me unable to. It's my ego. It's definitely connected to my ego because I want people to think, oh, you really did do something hard, as opposed to, oh, you went for a walk.
Yeah.
You know, you went for a hike. But so it's very much an ego-based thing for me probably. But I do find, I find the word tramp seems to, I actually started calling it my odyssey.
Oh,
my 3,000 kilometer odyssey, because I had a few things happen along the way which added to it, but even if I had have not had the few things happen along the way, it probably for me as being a non-tramper, non-hiker, having you know, trained up for it, because it scared the shit out of me, the idea when I'd made the decision to do it. As it got closer, I was so frantic about how do I do this? How do I get this right? I was researching and doing my training every day. I'd go out training and weights in a pack and walking so many flights of stairs, you know, just trying to take myself to, and then it was incredible because I'd sort of do an hour and a half. Sometimes I'd do 3 or 4 hours training in the weekend. And then still go, oh, but that's not even half the day that I'm going to be doing on trail. So it was really interesting to try and find a word that encapsulated what the experience was after the experience. And yeah, I started using my odyssey.
Because it's not even just about the actual physical walking. It's the mental hike, it's the mental tramp that you go through as well. It's the people, it's the food, it's the views, the terrain, and then the bad stuff as well. It's the getting injured, it's having to come off trail, there's so many different things. So yeah, just calling it a tramp or a hike or a through hike or a walk, it just doesn't cover it. And I think odyssey is, well, that's a great word. I'm gonna have to throw that into our vernacular now when we're talking about hiking.
And it's very much, it's a personal odyssey, you know, because my odyssey might be a walk in the park for someone, you know, for someone else. But you know, and that's,
I think it'd be very hard to find someone that would consider hiking 3,000 kilometers as a walk in the park.
One of the coolest things that someone said to me leading up to it, because as I say, I was at the closer it got to my start, the date I'd decided that I wanted to start. I started, you know, I was getting more and more anxious, really, doubting myself as much as anything. And I decided that I should go and have a tramp, so I contacted the Auckland Tramping Club, and they had a weekend tramp, just a one night, overnight, coming up in some ranges just southeast of Auckland called the Kaimai Ranges, beautiful sort of part of the country. And so I went down with them for that overnight session. And it's really cool, man. They have this bus, this wicked truck bus kind of thing. And it's seats like a bus. And then when you get to, we got to a campground on the edges of this, on the fringes of the Kaimais that we were going into for the overnight. Mm. And the night before the overnight, we stay in this truck, a bus. So we turn up to a location where there are, you know, toilets and things like that, but you fold down the seats and it just becomes basically like a marae, the wharenui, in a marae, which is the big sleeping house, the main meeting house for Maori, in Maori culture and on their marae. And it was just amazing. This thing turned into one big room that we all slept in our sleeping bags, you know, with our mattresses and things, and it was incredible. And then the next morning you get up and you start your hike. And as we started hiking, because I didn't know anyone there, you know, I'd called the tramping club president, and he said, "Yep, yeah, well, you can come down and do a hike." You know, he was into what I was trying to do. So a hike, I just said. And so we got into it, and there was a woman there, and she turned out she had done Te Araroa over a 2-year period. She'd done, I think she did North Island, then South Island. And in chatting with her, she said one of the wisest things that I heard that I could take with me into this. And she said, "Tramp your tramp."
Mm-hmm.
So I said how I'd been reading these blogs, and I was obsessed with a German woman, Bettina, I can't remember her surname. So she did it the year before me. And so I was reading some blogs of people who were doing the trail as they were doing it. And, you know, and I just loved her posts and the photos she took. And I'd be hanging out if she didn't post anything for 5, 6, 7 days, you know, I'd be hanging out for her next post. And then, and so through that, I was starting to get, you know, conscious of the fact that I might not come up to the standard that some of these people were at. And when this woman said to me, you know, this is about maybe a month before I went, and she said to me, "Tramp your tramp."
Mm-hmm.
One of the worst things you can do is feel an expectation, or, you know, feel like, oh, this guy does 50 kilometers a day. You know, like, that's not you. That's that person.
Mm-hmm.
Tramp your tramp. If you can't even make it to the hut and you have to pitch your tent, you know, like in New Zealand and the South Island in particular, there's this massive network, it's stunning, of huts, beautiful old musterers' huts. There's one in one called Stag Saddle, which is just, it was like a museum. The musterers from 1961 have written their names on the outside of the hut. And, you know, and it was there were about four of them from the Prouting family. So they'd come up into these mountains to muster the sheep. There used to be a lot of sheep farming, high country sheep farms and things. And so there's all this history in these corrugated iron huts that are incredibly basic and everything. But, you know, if you couldn't make one of the huts, then you pitch a tent. But it was just the wisest thing someone could have said to me. You know, it took that pressure off.
Mm.
Don't try and meet someone else's stamps. Don't try and be someone else. You know, tramp your tramp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we've heard that before with other people in the hiking community, but in other things as well. But hike your own hike is certainly something that I've been told as well, because I would have done that, you know, straight out the gate, just like let's go, the go, thinking that because I'm hiking and this is supposed to be hard, I should be walking 40, 50 kilometers per day. And then by the end of day one, my legs, my toes, everything is just in ribbons. But I should have just listened to my body, listen to what I wanted to do, and just hike my own hike. There was actually there's a friend of ours, an Irish chap called Derek Cullen, who has hiked the Camino in Spain. He's also done the Pacific Crest Trail, and he also recently he walked around around Ireland. He walked from Dublin down to Cork, right up to the north, just following the coastlines. I think it's like about 4,500 kilometers in total. He said
on that trail or a lot of it off trail.
So he connected a number of different trails. So there's a trail that goes down to Cork or to Kerry, sorry. And then he was, you know, connecting roads but then hopping onto another trail. So Ireland actually has quite a good network of hiking trails. But yeah, sometimes you have to obviously jump from one to the other using a network of roads and ferries and stuff like that. So it's a really good series. He has it up on his YouTube. I'll send you a link. But he said when he was doing the Camino one year, he met a woman and her daughter that were doing the Camino, and she was in her late 60s, and it was the first time she'd ever done anything like this. And she was in her late 60s. This is the third time she was doing the Camino, and she only did it the first time like a few years beforehand, and she never did anything like this, never hiked before. Until she was told that hiking is just walking. She had this idea that because you're doing this activity, you're hiking or tramping or whatever, that it has to be harder. It has to be climbing mountains. You have to be like, they have to be Bear Grylls essentially. And then someone just said, well, no, hiking is just, it's just walking. It's just walking with a purpose. And that's the way I think about it, is that it's, you're just going somewhere with a purpose. You're like, I have to get there today, or I'm going there today. And if I don't make it, that's fine. I'll just stop and I'll camp here, or I'll stay in this hostel, whatever it is. So I think that's something that a lot of people can resonate with as well, that it's just you're going for a walk. You're going for a very long walk. Yeah. It's going to be challenging. It definitely is, but the lines are blurred as to where it sits. And you can call it whatever you want. You can call it your Odyssey. You can call it your your 12 pubs of Christmas. You can call it whatever you want.
Well, it's a hard case too. I'm just thinking about it, hearing you say you can call it your Odyssey. My my surname is Hopkins. And my father used to be known, we would sort of call him Homer Bill. So he was Homer. So Homer's Odyssey, yeah, I could be, I'm the junior Homer. but that's right, eh? And the cool thing about that you're just walking, one of the things that, you know, I've brought away from the trail with me that just has stayed with me too is yeah, cool. You know, have your goals in life. Mm. It might be a 5-year goal. It might be a 1-year. It might be by the end of this day, I want to have achieved this. But the cool thing about what I found with tramping as I each day passed and as I got on and on further and further was you realize that, I set out each day with a goal, but I'm totally open to whatever comes in that day. Mm-hmm. I'm fully aware and fully conscious because I'm trying to get to that goal. That's what I do want to achieve. But I'm not going to resist what happens. What happens, happens. Especially, you know, you're in the mountains, you're in a forest, you're isolated. You have to go with what's going on. You can't force nature. I had 2 days of snow down in the South Island, and you know, you're not geared up for mountaineering. You're geared up, and it was in the mountains, and There was on the first day, there was a point where I thought, this really could be the end. If I don't get out of where I am, because my legs were starting, my feet were freezing. I had ultra, I wore like trail runners. And so after a few hours in knee-deep snow, my feet were frozen, and I didn't manage to get my I had some all wet all weather pants, really, really cool ones I just got, because I knew there was some cold weather coming. And but I had my I had the tramping pants where I could unzip them into shorts, and so I'd put the longs on. But there was a point during the day where I was still up near the pass of this mountain range out of Lake Ohau, and it was just knee deep snow the whole time. I had a fall at one point, and so I was getting pretty low in my morale, and I could feel my feet just starting to freeze, and then the freeze was starting to come up my legs. But I didn't want to stop, because I felt if I stopped, I was going to expose myself to. I couldn't use my hands to get my pack off. I had to use the heels of my hands to push the clasp on the pack to try and get that, because my fingers just were not functioning. And I had merino possum skin gloves on, but possum merino possum fur. So the but it was just I was been in snow for a few hours by this point, and I was just freezing. And I knew at one point it was like, you just have to stop, and you have to get your over trousers on, man. This is full on, because if you don't make it out of here, this is not going to end well,
Wow.
So I managed to get my pack off and get my over trousers out of the little pocket they were in and get them on. And man, it did make a difference. It made a huge difference getting my over trousers on. And then I was able to carry on, and I got out of the snow that day, and then the next day was back up into another little mountain range with fresh snow as well. And but yeah, there was that one point where you just I knew what my goal was, but I had to deal with this issue right here, right now. I was starting to picture in my mind if I would survive pitching my tent in the snow and having to sleep on the snow that night, or it was all sorts of stuff going through the mind. But
I've heard that from I've got a good bit of hiking done myself, but I certainly haven't got a long distance trail of that scale under my belt. But even the small bit of hiking that I've done, it's problem solving, and it gets you thinking on your feet. You really have to kind of go, oh, right, well, I wasn't expecting this. Especially your first couple of times out on a trail, what's going on here? The trail's closed. This part of the trail's closed. What am I going to do? Am I going to have to go home? Or do I try and find a way around? Or there's not a stream where they thought it was going to stream. I was banking on this for my water. What am I going to do? So it really kind of gets you thinking on your feet, and like obviously some of these things are like the extreme of it. Like there's some a little bit more simpler things, but yeah. And you said this before, because you have a really good podcast, by the way. And as I said to you last night, I'm deep into it. I haven't
Cool.
finished this. I'll raise my hand. I have not finished it. I posted it on our social media there today or yesterday. Because
Oh,
it,
thank you.
it's a fantastic log, and I have to commend you. It's a really, really nice way of experiencing the trail. One of the things that you say in it is that it's one step after the other. It hiking is just focus on your steps, focus on your steps, like literally focus on your steps, as in like know where you're going to put your feet. But also just focus on the now, just live in the now. And yes, you have that goal at the end of the day, or the end of the week, or the end of the month, or in 6 months' time, but you got to just keep your eye on the road. And
Yeah, that's
you'll
it.
be okay.
Because the only way you're going to reach that goal is by continuing to take those steps. So you've got to make sure each of those steps counts. Yeah, it's stunning, eh? I don't know about you, but do you find, because you're doing it for hours every day, And people probably could think, oh, but isn't that monotonous or whatever? And it's like anything but. And I would find I would come up with little processes for myself, I suppose. I would start sucking in my breath for a certain number of steps and then exhale the equivalent number of steps and suck in my breath. I would just create these rhythms and systems for myself. And it was just, man, I loved it. It became so simple. And yet it was challenging as all hell, like some days, and moments in days. But when you got to the end of that day, boy, isn't that a glorious feeling?
There was one thing. There's one thing that I do. I do it when I'm running and any kind of physical activity where it's hard, and you just kind of pointed to it there is breathing. And one thing I like to do is to count to 10 in my breaths, and then just go to the start again. And it sounds monotonous, it sounds boring, but it's quite therapeutic and meditative, and allows you to kind of just get into a zone and then appreciate everything that's around you. Even though something that you're doing is really like, the reason why I do it is if I'm going up a steep hill with a bag on my back, if I'm not focused, I'm just like, oh God, this is horrible. This is dreadful.
Oh,
Whereas if I
yeah.
do this breathing, it just calms me down. It's hard, but I'm able to kind of get myself up the hill, and I'm also still appreciating everything that's around me.
I have called it a few times. It was a meditation in action. And not the whole time, but there were significant periods of time where I might as well have been. I do meditate, and so it was some of the best meditation in a way that I've done, but without thinking that I'm doing a meditation. But when I would be in, I would have periods where I would come back into my sort of ego consciousness in a way, and realize that, wow, I've just been in this wonderful space of essentially meditation, but I happen to be hauling my ass up a mountain or trying to get down through a slippery tree-rooted steep as mountain slope. But it was a meditation.
Yeah, we've gone deep on the philosophical side of hiking. So let's go back to the start of this. I suppose I got introduced to you years ago, unbeknownst to you, through a little movie called Lord of the Rings, which you played a part in, and
Gambling of Rohan.
one of the riders of Rohan, second in
One
command.
of the riders. What do you mean, you swine? I commanded the armies of Rohan. How dare you?
I beseech to you, I am sorry. One of Theoden's pals, and
The
you,
amazing Bernard Hill.
yes,
Theoden, King Theoden.
fantastic actor, and portrays Theoden very, very well. I then came across you through a mutual friend of ours, Eleanor Osborne, who is also a New Zealand born, and she's a very accomplished hiker and filmmaker. And she put me in touch with you, and I found out through that you had hiked the Te Aroha in 2018, I want to say.
Yeah, 2017, 18. So
17.
I took off in October 14th, 2017. New Zealand had just had an election, and Jacinda Ardern. It was amazing. It was this bizarre election because there was a third party called New Zealand First, and they had got so much, like, when everyone pretty much knew that the leader of that minor party was going to be the kingmaker, the king or queen maker. And I got to a I was out of a the first 4 days are walking 3 days on the beach. It's called 90 Mile Beach, but the Maori name is Te Onirua o Tohi, the long walk of the long beach, a long walk of Tohi. There's a story behind this Māori chief who walked it. And so that's a brutal introduction for everyone, even really experienced hikers. They get to the end of the 3 days on the beach and their feet are blistered, and it's just, you know, it's a brutal introduction. And then you have these forests, these three of, it's only three now, I think, because one of them's closed because of an infestation for our forest that we have called Kauri Dieback. And I had been offered to stay at a house on the end of the first day in the forests. So I had to do an extra 8 kilometers on gravel roads to get to this house. But I wanted to do that because this woman was involved with an organization called Grandparents Raising Grandchildren. And I decided to raise funds for that organization through my walk. And so I got to her house completely forgetting that this was the day that the results of the election were going to be announced. It was about a week or 2 weeks after the election itself. And so I got to her house and I got to have a shower and she'd cooked a hot meal. It was like wicked. I sit down and there's the television and there he is. There's the king or queen maker, Winston Peters, making his announcement on television. And he decided to go with Jacinda Ardern, which most people probably weren't picking for us to go more to the left than to the right at that stage. And it was just, we just let out these yells of woo-hoo! Because both this woman and myself were definitely wanted Jacinda in instead of the current government that was still in there in power. So it was fascinating. It was, yeah, you have little moments like that that came up through this thing, which were just bizarre moments that I treasure so much.
What a nice way to start your trail. I hope you didn't get in your heads like, well, I wonder if every night's going to be like this. So what brought you to do the trail?
When I do a bit of MC work, and I was for the previous election, I had to introduce a speaker at a fundraiser for the Green Party. They had asked me to MC a function for them. I wasn't actually a Green Party member, but I was very much support a lot of what they're on about. And so I did it, and I had to introduce this guy called Jeff Chappell. And when I read his bio, one of the things he did was over about a 20-plus year period, he founded and created this thing called Te Araroa, which I'd never heard of, that you could hike, tramp, walk Cape Reinga up the – it's regarded as the northern tip of New Zealand. The actual northern tip is Cape – North Cape, which is just around from Cape Reinga, but Cape Reinga is where all the tourists go, to where this lighthouse still stands. So Cape Reinga to Bluff, which is the southern tip of the South Island, and beyond Bluff is Stewart Island, which is actually where I was born, or where I started life. My mum was a third generation Stewart Islander. And so when I heard about this trail, it was just the first thing that hit me was that this would be, ever since I was a teenager, I felt blessed to be from these islands. And I had it in my head. I used to wonder what I was, because we moved from Stewart Island to the far north, to this place called Russell, which was a little village back then. My father was a commercial fisherman. And then we moved to Auckland City when us kids were teenagers. And then I left home and went to university in Dunedin. And then I became a dancer and lived in Wellington and Australia. And so, but as a teenager, with that moving the length of the country and then down to Auckland, I literally used to feel like I didn't belong anywhere. I wondered where was I from? What was I? And for some reason, it took this long. I always realized I'm from Stewart Island. I'm from Rakiura, and only a few hundred people on this planet have ever been fourth generation Rakiurians, Stewart Islanders, and I'm one of them. And that made me feel like, cool, I know where I'm from there. No matter where I'm living, that's where I'm from, even though we left there when I was 3 years old. But I still have all my cousins there and everything and family, you know, that extended family there, the wider family. And I go down there every now and then. So when I read about this trail, it was like, here is my ultimate expression of my gratitude. This is how I express my gratitude that I was born in these South Pacific, remote South Pacific islands of Aotearoa. And as soon as I made that decision, all these other things bombarded me of going, oh, my father and brother are both dead. And it was like, oh, I can walk some of my father and brother's ashes home to Stewart Island. I can walk them the length of the country. And because we used to crayfish off Cape Reinga. My brother and I both used to crayfish with my father off there as commercial crayfishermen. So that fell in place. And then the crowning glory for me is I have three grandchildren. So I was like, wow, if my grandchildren only ever remember one thing about me, the fact that I walked the length of New Zealand, that'll do. That's all they need to. Lord of the Rings, yeah, that's cool. But walking the length of New Zealand, that was the legacy.
Yeah.
And then a whole bunch of other stuff happened as well. You know, I decided to do the fundraising and the podcast and things like that.
So how did the podcast come about? And it's the Long Way Home?
The Long Way Home, yeah.
Yeah.
Radio New Zealand. Radio New Zealand's like our public broadcaster, our state-funded public broadcaster. And it was amazing. I don't own a home. So I wondered how I was going to be paying my rent I was going to give myself 5 months, you know, cause I was 61. I was going to turn 62 1 month into it and haven't been a tramper. So I didn't want to judge, you know, I didn't want to predict that I could do it in 4 months or 4.5 months, like some of the younger people that I saw doing it. So I was allowing 5 months and it was like, far out. How am I paying my rent for 5 months? And then I don't know why I thought of a podcast. And I decided to approach Radio New Zealand and I was blown away. They were just immediately into it, essentially. Like, yeah, that's cool. And then they upped it. They were going to post one, as long as I could get audio files to them each week. A guy there, Justin Gregory, fantastic dude, was going to edit like a 12, 15 minute podcast out of however much audio I was supplying each week. And so that was really cool. And they were going to pay me. It wasn't quite enough to make my rent. But as we got closer to it, a couple of weeks out, they contacted me and said, Bruce, we're going to up the ante. We're going to give you more. We want to pay you more. So they paid me enough that did pay my rent, which was just such a relief, such a relief. And so I was now a professional tramper with no pressure, but it was and it was really cool because they made a decision really early on after a couple of the podcasts had been put on their website. Each on a Monday night they would post the new podcast on the website, and after the first couple they contacted me and said, oh, look, every time you have five new podcasts, we're going to play them on Catherine Ryan, who's like the main 9 o'clock till midday. She's the main premier kind of show on Radio New Zealand, politics, all of that sort of stuff, international interviews. And but then she'll have a book reading each day. There's like a book reading or something. And so they were going to replace, when there were five new podcasts up, for that next week, they were going to replace those book readings with my podcasts, my five podcasts. And that was just such a buzz, you know, like to think that they were going to do that. And then when I would get to towns as I was doing the tramp, I would start meeting people, or even on trail, you know, I would start meeting people and go, oh, well, you're doing that podcast. Oh, cool. I love that. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Apparently the podcast was like one of the most highly rated, even of all the international ones listened to in New Zealand at the time. It ranked in the top sort of, you know, 10, 20 podcasts each week So it was a buzz. It was really cool.
Yeah, because
But
it.
as I say, Justin Gregory and Radio New Zealand sort of put it together. I
Yeah.
just sent raw audio files.
You just hiked 3,000 miles or 3,000 kilometers and recorded on the way. Just
And
that
met the
in
most amazing people, because that's a lot of it was around chatting to people that I would
Yeah.
meet.
And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about it as well, is that as I said, I haven't finished it yet, and I'm really looking forward to doing it today and finishing it today, because it's digestible is one of the nice things about it, is that it's just these 15, between 10 and 15 minute short podcasts, but they kind of capture a moment, or they capture something important along the trail, whether it be a section of the trail or someone you're speaking to or something like that. And one of the there was two interactions that I really, well, every interaction is amazing, but there was two particular interactions. One was you actually interview Jeff Chappell, the
Yeah.
founder of the Te Araroa. The second one, I'm sorry, the interview is fantastic, and I think he sings in it. He actually sings the song in the
He's
interview.
amazing, man. I hadn't clicked. There was a band when I was a dancer, and I got asked to come back from Australia and join New Zealand's kind of premier contemporary dance company, Limbs Dance Company. There was a music group around, avant-garde music group called From Scratch. They used thongs, rubber thongs on your feet, jandals, we call them jandals. So they used the bottoms of thongs and pounded the ends of PVC pipes that had been cut to different lengths and created these astounding soundscapes. I would go to their shows, like they were just so he was one of the founders of that. He's a renowned journalist, he's an author, he's not a big dude. And he's this guy who created this trail and connected a bit like what you said about the trails in Ireland. Some of it's still on water. There's a lot of people think there's too much road walking still in the North Island, about 14%. But to connect up the existing trails and farm tracks that people have given permission for it to cross, so it was just amazing getting to meet him, to go and sit with him. And just look at him and go, man, because on the Te Araroa website, in there somewhere, you can find a book that he wrote. And it was just mesmerizing reading his journey of creating this trail. Him and his wife, Miriam Betson, she was very much a part of it.
Wow. Yeah, I have
So,
to.
yeah, I got to meet him. It was like, ah. And he and Miriam flew down and came to Bluff. I didn't know they were going to be there to meet me when I finished. That was just, I almost felt like, no, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve that, man. That's like, that was out of it. That was cool.
That's beautiful. I was just thinking there, it does take a certain type of person to think. Not just to think about it, but to go and do it, to go, you know what this country needs? One continuous trail that goes from one end to the other, and you just walk it, or you kayak a little bit of it, and you cycle some of it, but you just walk.
Apparently, it had been mooted, amongst the community sort of thing of the tramping community and everything. And so the government, I don't know if this probably about the 80s, 70, yeah, be in the 80s sometime. The government started one of their branches, agencies started trying to create it, to put it together. And after a number of years, they couldn't, they gave up. And along comes this bloody Jeff Chappell and takes the mantle and then makes it happen.
Well, you get rid of that governmental bureaucracy, and you just get some whack job that he loves banging pipes with tongs, and he'll go do it. One of the other interactions that I really loved, and it was like, I think it was early on, it might have been like the second episode, you bumped into a bunch of kids, that were all fishing. I found a beautiful little interaction where you're just like, oh, what are you going to do when you grow up? And there's a, I don't know, fish. I know a
That
lot
was
about cows.
so cool.
And one guy goes, I know a lot about cows for my age, so maybe.
No, yeah, cars. He
Oh,
said
cars.
cars. It was so funny that That was happened at a place called Waitangi, which is where the Treaty of Waitangi was signed. For when Māori and Busby, like the you know the,
okay.
the British, right? So that was there, and you come down out of it's not a well, it's an okay walk, but you're walking through pine forest on a forest track from Kirikiri. It's not a hard day, and it's pretty cool. And you come down through a golf course eventually when you get out of these hills. And then you come down past the marae, the treaty house, Waitangi Treaty House.
Mm.
And then you cross a bridge over an estuary. And there's often people either jumping off the bridge or fishing off the bridge. And sure enough, there were these couple of kids fishing. So I was I just loved sort of seeing them. So I stood and watched them for a little bit, and then I carried on walking, and then it was like, wait on, man, you need to go back and talk to those guys, those kids. So I got my mic out. I still had a handheld microphone at that place. That time I replaced it when I got to Auckland with just my phone. So I went back and I just said to them, well, look, I'm just doing a thing called a podcast. You know, I'm doing this walk, and would you guys be into having a chat? You know, oh, yeah. And oh, now I'm suddenly forgetting. Can you remember their names? They had two outrageous names. It was just,
No, I.
Oh, man. I forget. That was just so bizarre. That was the first thing, was when they said their names. I was wondering if they were having me on. It was just so crazy.
Oh, I do remember something like that. I remember just because I was walking myself at the time when I was listening to him. I was like, that's his name?
Yeah, it was. It was almost like a Greek.
Yeah, like so William the Conqueror bizarre. Or something like that. Like real kind of like prowess in his name.
Yeah.
All the more reason.
So bad that I've forgotten that. But they were just fantastic, yeah. So I just talked to them about, you know, so what off. No, I was going to say Phoenix. No, it wasn't Phoenix.
Well, it's all the more reason for people to listen to the podcast. It's very good.
Damn! I'm going to be lost concentration because I want to remember their names now. Lennox was one, and haven't got the other one. But the other one was the doozy, and they were fantastic. Hey, they were about maybe 10, 11 years old. And it was that beautiful kind of just that they were quite they were into sort of beefing it up a little bit. You know, oh yeah, I caught a, you know, 30-pound kingy one time and all of this sort of stuff and how good at fishing they were. And so then, yeah, like you say, I said to them at one point, so what do you reckon you might be, you know, when you grow up? What do you think you might get into? And one of them was, oh, fishing. I want to be a fisherman, you know. And that's the other one. He was like, oh, I know quite a bit about cars for my age. It's just beautiful, eh? Machiavelli. Machiavelli was his name.
Oh, yeah, and I remember you saying Machiavelli, well done.
Lennox and Machiavelli.
You congratulated him on his name. Yeah, like the podcast is full of these fantastic interactions, you know, you family members. Obviously, you speak to your mom at the start and you have your grandkids at one point and you have... just all these amazing people that you meet along the trail. And you also have your video series on YouTube as well, under the same name, which is, again, another fantastic diary of not just the trail, but also getting to know you as well. And it's well worth the watch.
With the video, I didn't do a lot of video of the people that I talked to in the podcast. I didn't want to intrude on them like that, you know, like I was like, oh, now you have to get permission. You know, are you okay if I maybe at some point, I didn't know what I was intending to do with the video stuff. And it was the most lousy handheld video, as you will have seen, you know, from someone who's made his living for a little bit, part of my living in the film and, and television production industry. It was the most lousy camera work and everything.
Well, that's part of the getting to know you as well. Just like,
I
even though you did this, you still have, like, you got to learn how to hold the camera. But it was good. Like, despite all that, it's still a very, very enjoyable thing to watch. And there was you did obviously the hike for yourself. Obviously, that was first and foremost, and you did it for charity and all these different reasons. And you already alluded to it, but you carried ashes of your father and your brother at one end. So, what was there any kind of inspiration? Sorry, you have already alluded to this, but maybe you might go into that a little bit more if you don't mind.
Just my father and brother were both of them. If people ask me, oh, what would your father and brother think about that? That you're carrying some of their ashes back home, back to the, walking them 3,000 kilometers back, and literally, my response would be they'd probably say, "Oh, you bloody idiot! Just get a bloody bus, drive your car, you bloody idiot!" Like, yeah, they, I don't know if they would get it at all, but I think both of them, when I got to the end, wouldn't be so much about the fact that I carried their ashes. They'd just be maybe quietly impressed that, oh shit, you did make it. Got there. Still don't know
It's more,
why you would want to, but you got there.
it was nearly more out of spite. I'll show you, I can do this.
And it was just, it was just, I think I had a massive, massive respect for my father and my brother as well. But they were, as most of us human beings are, we're damaged goods. So we have some part of us that, you just wonder why the hell we're like we are. So my father and brother very much both had areas of their lives we just couldn't, I could not understand them. But I also, as I say, my father as a seaman, like out on the ocean, because we used to catch the deep water crayfish. So we weren't in around the coastline. We were out at sea, and I went through experiences with my father and brother that were absolutely massive, massive experiences in life to go through out in the elements and everything. And I grew up seeing how hard my father worked and how he literally, one of his sayings was, if you yelled, if you smashed your hand or cut yourself or something, and you yelled, he'd be like, oh, Jesus, you yelled before it bloody hit you. But literally, the thing is, he was like that. Like he wouldn't yell. He might give a, oh, Christ, that bloody hurt, or and you'd later see how much he had hit himself or whatever. So they were both that kind of hard doer kind of Kiwi blokes. And so I had this massive, massive respect and love for both of them. And so it was, just when the idea came into my mind that I can carry this little symbolic, I have no idea what part of their body I've got. Maybe it's half coffin and half testicle. Who knows? But I've got some part of them in ash form, and just symbolically, to do that, it didn't so much give me, I already had my motivation. It wasn't the motivation was I've got to complete this because I'm carrying dad and my brother with me, but I did at times reflect on them when I was finding it hard going. I did sometimes reflect on that I had them there, and it was like, no, bugger this, man. I'm gonna get you guys there. We're gonna make it.
There's one of the episodes where you mention that you had brought a bit of your brother's ashes out on trip before, and so it was a point, I think it was where you had injured yourself on the Te Araroa, and you had to come off trail. He said it was your brother cursing you because the last time you brought his asses out, something else happened.
Oh man, I it was just bizarre. I smashed my shin. I fell on a beach, another beach. Only this beach was it's called Ocean Beach. Beautiful white sand, Pacific Ocean, just magnificent. Windy, windy day, and I had been asked by a couple who had a lodge that a number of Tararua trampers would stay at.
Mm.
And they were, and the woman herself, she's amazing. She had a kidney transplant, and then she gave a kidney to her husband, and then she walked Tararua in sections. I don't know if she did it all, but she did it most of it in sections, and her husband was her support crew in a van. So she wanted to prove that, you know, you could give someone a kidney and still live a normal life sort of thing. And so when they heard about me, they asked if I would come in and have a cup of tea when I was going past their place because I wasn't staying there. And so I did. And it meant I was late at the start of that day. And they actually gave me a ride up to the trailhead of this bit of trail a couple of kilometers further along from where their place was. They dropped me off and I got going. I was like, oh man, I'm late. The tide's coming in. When you're walking the beaches, you don't want to be walking the beaches on the high tide. You want to start on a beach when it's the tide's going out. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get an extended period of time with the beach out of the soft sand. So the tide was coming in. By the time I got towards the end of Ocean Beach, which is about 4 hours, still had another 5 hours to go up, and it was going to be steep terrain over this area called Bream Head, Whangarei Heads. And I was, sure enough, I'd been pushed up into the soft sand by the tide. And at one point, I lifted my foot as a wave came up, and then I put it back down, and it was like I stood on ice. My foot just went straight out from under me, and I went straight over onto my shins. And both my hiking poles were under my left shin. And, you know, I had my probably 15 to 20 kg in my pack at this stage. And it was agony. I smashed my shin onto my poles, but it didn't break the skin or anything. I could see it was like immediately starting to bruise. And, oh, man. So I had a little bit of a sit down while I tried to cool it off. And then I got going again. By the end of that day, when I got out of this hilled area and everything, I couldn't walk. So I had a rest day the next day with these people that I was staying with that night. And then it was worse. So I got them asked if they could take me into Whangarei City to the hospital. So I went in there, and by this stage, within that day, it had become cellulitis. And so it was this horrific, it was really horrible infection under the skin on the bone of my shin.
Mm.
And so I got a course of antibiotics, which didn't work. So I had to have two courses of that. It was like I had 16 days of not being able to walk. I was dragging the first 3 nights. The people brought me back to Auckland, and I came back to my little flat and stayed here, and my grandkids would come around and stuff. But I had to drag myself on my bum to go to the toilet. I literally couldn't stand. It was agony. And so eventually it healed to the point where I could walk, but I still couldn't. There's no way I could put a pack on my back and tramp. So I had a day where I took my grandkids, two of my grandkids out, and we went to a couple of places, and then I got home. And I was starting to get ready to get my gear together for a few days' time when I was going to get back on trail. And I couldn't find my father and brother's ashes. And I'd had them in a waist belt that I'd been wearing. And for some reason, that day I took my grandkids out, I decided to wear that waist belt and just have my wallet in there and leave the ashes in there. And I'd got home. Fortunately, I'd taken my wallet out of that waist belt, but I'd got home and it was like, Wes, what did I do with the waist belt? So I retraced my steps twice through the city. It was just like, and I lost my father and brother's ashes. I hadn't realized my sister-in-law still had some of my brother's. She'd scattered them. But she'd kept some, so that was a relief. It was a couple of days later I discovered, oh, I can get some more of their ashes. So this time I got another bit of their body parts, you know, a different bit.
The right
I
gasket.
didn't feel happy carrying the scrotum anyway, so. But it was something I'm never, it was like, I will never live that down, you know, in my family. Didn't you lose Dad and Doug's ashes one time?
Oh, yeah. It's just it like the Murphy's Law, as they in the mycology, you know, what can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah, and then I realized a while later on the trail, I realized, you know what? I should have just shut up about it and got a couple of little, because they were like those little film canisters you used to have for 35 mil film in. So, and I taped them up and everything. So I could have just got another couple of those, got some bloody roadkill that I'd found, burned it up, got the ashes from that, put it in, and no one would have known.
You would have known. That's the thing. You would have known. I suppose we're kind of conscious on time here, but maybe coming towards the end, I think we could definitely talk about this and like.
Sorry, I think I told you previously that I rave.
No,
So
and this is what the purpose of this podcast is. This is your stage. We want to hear your story because you do have a fantastic story. And I'll being completely honest, like we did have this conversation yesterday, and I didn't think that we were going to talk for as long as we did, and we did. And I was kicking myself that I didn't record it because we had a really good conversation yesterday. But I just want to ask you a kind of summing up the hike or the tramp. What would you cherish most about your Odyssey?
It's as simple as the fact that I did it, you know, like, and it I came away from it. I've been a bit of a people pleaser all through my life. You know, I don't like thinking that the people might not like me or might, you know, that I've annoyed someone or whatever. And I've done some major screw ups in my life, but I always try to set things right if I have screwed things up or whatever. But you know, I've very much been that sort of person that's essentially what can be called a people pleaser, really. And it was amazing because at the in completing Tararua, I've come away with a sense of not having to justify myself at all. I never really felt like I had to justify myself, but something about doing the trail has left me just with a wonderful, wonderful sense of kind of completeness. You know, if this is all there is, it's a bit like when someone said to me, oh, if the only, you know, if you don't get any more work as an actor after Lord of the Rings, that's not a bad one to go out on or, you know, a legacy to have. And it's the same in terms of, I actually feel it, you know, in terms of my life, that if my legacy is that I walked the length of New Zealand once, then man, that's all I can ask for. That's as good as I can ask for. I can't think of it. I've never been into wanting to be an Olympian, to be the best, you know, to break a record. I've never been that sort of person. It's cool that other people do that, but that's not what I'm into. But something about the trail and completing the trail definitely gave me some sense of cool, man. That'll do. That'll do.
You mentioned earlier on about like not really kind of for a while not really knowing where you were from or you know what your roots were, and you did say that you kind of found that over the years that you were from Stewart Island. That's where your heritage is, and that's what you identify as. Do you think that the trail added to that in any way? Did you feel more connected to people? Did you learn anything about New Zealand that you hadn't have you didn't know before?
Because I used to be in dance companies, and also when I didn't get any more work after doing Lord of the Rings, I became a tour guide. I'd go to fan conventions around the world, and I kind of realized, oh, you're all coming to New Zealand. Well, maybe I haven't got any other work. I'll try and set myself up. I got my licenses and joined the Professional Tour Guides Association, and so I started doing tour guiding. And none of my tour guiding work really was around Lord of the Rings, but it was cool. I got to, travel around this country again and everything. But getting to see it from in the belly, in the belly of the beast, because in the South Island, you're just down the Southern Alps. You're down on the eastern flanks of the Southern Alps. You cross the divide at one point around Arthur's Pass. And it's just, dude, it gave me a heightened, even I had a wonderful sense of appreciation of where of this land and everything. And in terms of belonging, it was also like, yeah, I am of this land. This is my, I am tangata whenua. Māori, the description of people from this land is tangata whenua. The manuhiri are the visitors, the tangata whenua are the people of the land. And I, maybe some, there might be some Māori who'd say, take it easy, brother. But I have no hesitance in calling myself tangata whenua, my apākehā tangata whenua. But I also, it also gave me a heightened, like I say, I mentioned before, Stag Saddle, that hut with the musteras, with that written on the outside in 1961. This was the autumn muster, the winter muster, et cetera, just to touch tangibly, sort of be in contact with that aspect of this country. Because so many New Zealand, because of our isolation, that's why I used to wonder about it. I never had the desire as a teenager to trace my roots back. People back when I was a teenager still kind of called the England and the UK the homeland, and I never understood that. I never understood that. I was like, I'm from here. I'm not from there. What are you talking about? And so a lot of people, a lot of Kiwis would do their OE, their overseas experience, would leave high school, leave university. If they went to university, first thing they'd do was OE, get to England, get to London, work in a pub, live in a flat with other Kiwis or Australians. It was just, I couldn't understand that stuff. And in a sense, what walking Te Araroa did for me was cemented that I don't need to. It's cool. I have actually found out from my mother's side some of my heritage back to Scotland. She's an Armstrong, but I'm very much, it's cemented that I am of this land, and then I got to walk its mountains and cross its rivers and walk its forests. It was just magnificent.
And you can hear when you talk as well. Like, you speak the tongue quite well, as far as I know, and not by any means. I'm actually learning Māori from you right now. So, like, you can hear when you say it. You say the words with such passion. You talk about the land with such passion. And anyone I've ever heard that has walked the Te Aroha, people that I've had on the show already, or people like Elena that is going hiking that at the moment. She's currently out on the TA. They get this kind of an influx or an injection of the culture and the nature that's around them, because it's like nowhere else on the planet. Now, again, I'm not speaking from experience. I'm just speaking from listening to people talk about this, and that it's a completely different experience to any other trail on the planet. Hiking this trail is it's a it is it's another world.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because I watched Elena's video series and everything on YouTube, which I loved, and it was interesting because I did a couple of days in the Richmond Ranges with a guy, a young Kiwi guy, who he was when he was finishing Te Araroa, he was basically going straight over to do the PCT, And he was a really fit young dude. So I do want to try and catch up with him actually to see if he got to do it and how it was. But yeah, it's a fascinating gig, eh? Like it's I imagine those trails as well. All of those long trails. They once you've done them, I think it's because it's 3 years. It's over 3 years since I started. It's not quite 3 years since I finished. But I don't think there's a day goes by where I'm not somehow transported to my trail experience in my heart, in my mind. It's a really interesting gig. So when you're from the country that you're doing the trail in, there will be, I imagine, a little bit more of a heightened sense of connection.
From the trail, was there? Sorry, if there was anything about the trip, and I think I already know the answer to this question. If there was anything about your trip or your odyssey or your trail or your tramp that you could change,
Sorry.
what would it be?
It's tempting to say, not getting injured, and then not getting cancer. I got exposed. I had a session where, because I sweat massive. I do yoga classes, and it's embarrassing. When I was a dancer, I would just leave pools of water on the floor. If there was a piece in a dance where you were lying on the floor, it's. I don't know what it is, but I just sweat and sweat. So I was getting dehydrated. At one point, I very early on, still up in the upper North Island, I urinated black. It was black liquid when I urinated one time. I went online, had a look, thought I had it sussed because I had open heart surgery a year and a half before I started the trail. It was discovered my brother died from an aneurysm, and they did a scan on me. One time, because they discovered I had I have a missing heartbeat, and so they wanted to scan my heart to see what's going on. Why am I missing a? And my brother had died of an aneurysm, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, there's this aneurysm above my heart. My ascending aorta was an in aneurysm, and it was at a point where they wanted to get in there and get it out because it wasn't going to be that long before it blew, and it would be pretty instant death at that point.
Wow.
So I had open heart surgery, and they cut they put a section of Dacron pipe, stitched it onto my heart, and joined it to the rest of my aorta. And so I'd had that, and so I'm on a anticoagulant called Pradaxa. So I looked up online and what can cause, blood, because I read that black urine is blood, dried blood. So what can cause that? Dehydration. Endurance events and anticoagulants or blood thinners were three of the list of things, and it was like, oh, there we go, I've got it. I'll just make sure I'm hydrating more. So I did, and then a bit further on down the track, about the middle of the North Island, I had 3 days in a row, and then on the third day it started to hurt, and on the third day it was actually blood. It was red blood. It wasn't black anymore. And I got to a town called Tikawiti and went straight to the medical center and blah de blah. So I had to get scanned and again and it was a small cancer mass in my bladder.
Wow.
So I had to out and get that cut out and then wait a couple of weeks before I could get back on trail. And so it's tempting to say, it'd be cool to have to be able to do a through trail, a through hike, without those bloody interruptions. Because every time you feel your fitness draining, and every time when you have a break like that after you've been going for, a couple of weeks solid or 2 or 3 weeks solid, you just eat. I'm just pegging out. It was crazy. So again, as I say, it's tempting to think, well, it'd be great to. If I could do it again and not have those, but in fact, they were part of it. They were very much those having those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
We're very much part of what kind of gave me I don't know what the word is. I was going to say a sense of achievement, but that doesn't do it justice, really. It's but the feeling that I got when I finished is probably partly flavored because of those things.
There's definitely a Maori proverb for that somewhere.
yeah.
There's definitely that sense of achievement over, you know, against all odds, achieving it.
There's the thing. There's it's called whakatauki, the Maori proverbs, and you've heard Elena.
Mm.
She did it when she did the PCT. You know. With that whole thing, it is the people, it is the people, it is the people. And yeah, that includes, I think, you know, it is you, it is you, it is you, you know, you are the people. So yeah, it's such a wonderful opportunity to go inside. As I say, I meditate and stuff, have been for years, but I did a 10-day Vipassana silent meditation retreat one time. That was pretty out of it. That's a pretty fascinating journey. But even that, I don't know. I don't think even that compares to being what I loved about my Te Araroa, because of the injuries, thankfully, because of the medical situation and the injuries, I was right at the back end. When I managed to finally have the operation, get going again and hit the South Island, I was at the end of the season. That's why I had 2 days in the snow as down out of Lake Ohau and everything. So I was heading into winter when I was finishing. And the cool thing about that, like, it would have been neat to meet more people, but I met enough people. And when I wasn't meeting people, I was meeting me.
Yeah.
And I was in the mountains with me, and I was having to decide, shall I cross this river with me, just me? And it was amazing. It was amazing to meet me on that level.
Are you still hiking? Are you still tramping? Have you got anything planned?
I had a small temp employment agency that I would try and find non-acting work for actors to do between acting jobs, because that's how I made my living. And there's all these actors graduating from acting schools and everything. There's no work for them. So I created a small temp employment agency to try and use their communication skills, you know, for doing surveys and things like that. And it's never made me a living. I did it, formed it in 2011. And when I finished the tramp, I came home. And after about 6 or 7 months, I was kind of thinking, oh, maybe I should just get rid of the company, try and find myself a job, get on, you know, try and get something going. And suddenly I got a call out of the blue from a big council organization asking if I still had my company and if I could supply personnel for a particular thing. Then it turns out they had a tender coming up to contract for 3 years to win the contract to supply transport ambassadors to Auckland Transport. And so I for the first time in my life, put a tender together and I won it. It was a contested tender. So I've been really focused on trying to make sure my business is functioning and it's paying me the best wage I've ever earned in my life, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been happy to stay focused on that. But in March, so next month, I have a friend who owned a restaurant for 20 years in Wanaka. And that restaurant took every hour of his life. And so now he's out of that restaurant and he's kind of, you know, drifting.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. He's got a bunch of money because he got a good price for selling it and all of that. But he's so I called him a few weeks ago and I said, What are you up to, man? I need to get back out and do a few days on trail again. And the section of trail between Lake Wanaka and Arrowtown, which is the one day's hike, a nice easy day's hike out of Queenstown, is called the Motutapu Track. And it's on this land that Shania Twain bought, her and her husband owned, and they're now separated. So her husband bought it, the guy Mutt. He was in a band called, crazy band back in the day. But it's a beautiful, beautiful section of trail up in the mountains, up in the, it's just stunning. So I said to this guy, have you ever done the Motutapu Track? And he'd been up in the mountains a little bit, but he hadn't done it. So I'm going down the last week of March, and I'm going to do, we'll do 4 days, maybe might even take 5 days, maybe just to take it easy, like and just get up into those mountains. I'd hoped I might have been able to get down and do a few days with Elena on one of the sections, but she's such a man, she's a trooper, eh? Like she's carving it up. So she'll be sort of finished before I can really feel like I can justify taking some time off. I have a bunch of work with the America's Cup, the Prada Cup and the America's Cup, which are going on at the moment. So when they're sailing, they use my personnel to make sure people know what their transport options are around the city and all that sort of stuff. So I want to be around for that particular job in particular. That particular job in particular. But yeah, so I don't feel like I can take the time off, but I would so love to have gone. And mind you, she would have left me, she'd be at the hut 2 hours before me at the end of the day, I would imagine.
Well,
She's
like
a powerhouse.
she is, yeah. Just even just looking at the miles that she was doing on the PCT, yeah, absolutely. Like she just builds it up, and that's what happens. I'm sure there was days where you shocked yourself with how far you were able to walk in a day. As every single day is training for the next day. Today I'm training for tomorrow, and I'm training for next week, and then I'm next month.
And
The lock.
that's why when you have an injury too or something, and you have to have all this lay time, it's just horrible because you just, even if your body's not necessarily, devolving, you feel in your mind that you're just, oh no, I'm losing all that conditioning and everything. It's quite bizarre.
Bruce, this has been absolutely fantastic, and as I said, we can talk for days probably, and we probably will speak again. There's a whole section of your life around rugby that we never got to talk about, because I'm a massive rugby fan, and
Oh, really?
yeah, and we finally bet the Ireland bet the All Blacks a couple of years ago twice. Okay, just so you know that. And we'll just forget about all the times that you destroyed us. Yeah, it's been an absolute treat talking to you. And anyone who listened to this and you want to learn more about Bruce and his journey, he has his podcast called The Long Way Home. It's on Spotify, and he has his YouTube series as well under the same name. Bruce, it's been an absolute treat speaking to you. Your adventure, your odyssey is amazing, and your approach and what you've taken away from it is inspiring, and yeah, I can't wait to hear more about your further adventures. And yeah, it's been
Very cool. I would like to pass on my respects to all of you people who might be listening to this who are trampers, hikers. I have so much respect for people who have made that activity, that form of active physical activity and mental activity, part of their lifestyle. Because as I say, I wasn't one up until then. I loved nature and everything, but I hadn't gone out and been in it, like tramping gets you in it. And so I have a lot of respect for people who do this. Yeah, so and thank you, man. Thank you for having me, rave at you.
It's been an enjoyable rave by all means. Well, you are a tramper, you are a hiker, and you're everything else, and you're a king of Rohan as well.
don't tell Théoden in there. I was just his right hand man.
Not in the books.
No, unfortunately, Hummer in the movies got taken out by a wag.
Oh yeah,
conveniently taken out by a wag. That was my take on that. I didn't sort of think it through at the time, but it was because the guy who played Hummer he's a friend of mine.
Yeah,
he's a friend of mine, but he's not a horse riding, fighting. You know, hasn't come from that sort of background. He's a fantastic actor, but not that sort of thing. And I think that was my take on it. Was they went, oh, we want Hummer to be in the thick of the battle, but he's probably not, you know, going to be that guy. So let's replace him. Let's make up a guy called, Gambling. Let's give him that name. There's Gambling the Old in the books.
Yeah.
But so they replaced. And then let's get rid of the evidence. Let's have a wag take out Hummer.
I'm sure that's so, something that you get to tease him with over the years as mates.
No, I still feel a bit guilty about it. Eh? It's like, oh.
Okay, Bruce, have a fantastic evening, I think.
Thank you so much. You've
probably seen the light trickling in here
in
Irish spring morning. So I'm going to go have my breakfast, have another cup of coffee, and have a great evening.
Cheers.
Well, that was a bit of fun, wasn't it? I had fun. I think Bruce had fun. Did you have fun? I'm delighted to be able to say now that I personally know one of the men of Rohan. Bruce has a lot of tales to tell, a lot of adventures and odysseys. I can't wait to hear them all. I hope to go over to New Zealand and meet him in person. I'm hoping to go over there soon. He's currently hiking, I'm sure, as we speak. Maybe not as we speak because we're in a different, completely different time zone, but you know what I mean. If you get a chance, head over to your podcast center, Spotify, iTunes, the like, and find The Long Way Home by Bruce Hopkins. It's fantastic. I highly, highly recommend it. And don't forget to give this podcast a like, a share, a review. Tell your friends. Tell everybody. I'll be back in 2 weeks. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And I will speak to you then. Happy trails.